Welcome back to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. I'm joined by Emma Bonan. We're both back after a little Easter break. We're refreshed. We've done Easter. We've done Passover. Happy Eid to those celebrating that festival. And we're back. And actually, we've got to start by thanking Dominic Raab. Because normally what happens to Emma and I is...
Every
single time. Is we talk about, you know, a possible breaking news story. We finish record. I publish the show. And 20 minutes later, I have to text Emma being like, such and such that we speculated on has now happened.
Yeah. We're usually right, to be fair. What we think will happen happens.
Yes, exactly. But we don't get to claim credit quite at the time. This time, Dominic Raab has resigned just in time for the podcast. So thank you very much, Dominic Raab.
Thank you for all that you do.
Thank you for all that you do. Dominic Raab has resigned from the government as Justice Secretary and Deputy Prime Minister after some of the accounts of bullying and claims of bullying against him were upheld in a report by Adam Tolley KC, who was investigating it on behalf of Rishi Sunak. Not everything was upheld, but two were, and that was enough for him to resign. He'd committed live on Sophie Ridge's programme on Sky News that he would resign. It was obviously untenable for these things to be found and him not to resign. We're going to have to unpack his resignation letter because it's not the tone of someone who thinks they have done wrong and are accepting responsibility for it. I'm not going to read you the whole thing. It's not, contrite is not the word. He talks about, he said, whilst I feel duty bound to accept the outcome of the inquiry, it dismissed all but two of the claims levelled against me. I also believe that its two adverse findings are flawed.
And I only done the two murders, Gov.
Well, there's that, but let's just finish this sentence, which I think in some ways is more important. He says, I also believe that its two adverse findings are flawed and set a dangerous precedent for the conduct of good government. Yeah, later on, he says, ministers must be able to give direct critical feedback on briefings and submissions to senior officials in order to set the standards and drive reform the public expect of us. He talks about some specific incidents as well, including obviously when he was the foreign secretary, and there must have been some kind of incident over negotiations over Gibraltar, which he mentions specifically. I won't read you the whole letter. It's quite long, but we will link to it in the show notes. So this is not a man that is happy to accept responsibilities and happy to resign, or accepts that he has to resign. We're told Rishi Sunak did not ask him to resign, but obviously has not told him he doesn't have to. He's let a very close ally leave government. There's quite a lot to unpack. What will Raab do on the backbenches? How will Rishi Sunak be questioned on this? I have to say, I'm not sure Sunak is particularly the one in the spotlight here. He put the investigation forward. He's got it. He hasn't resisted Raab's resignation. Quite a big deal for him to lose Raab from his government. I think the problem Sunak has, actually, and I want your take on this, Emma, is this is now what, the third person that's had to resign from his government. Two of them are on this kind of similar bullying kind of behaviour. So Gavin Williamson went on a similar thing. Now, you can kind of spin this both ways. You can do the kind of, aren't the Tories evil thing? Aren't they all nasty pieces of work? You can do the kind of the civil service out to get the Tory ministers thing. I suspect, as ever, the truth is somewhere in the middle, that these two were quite difficult people to work for and some of the civil servants were not standing for it. Go on, unleash.
So I've managed people and I've been managed, and I've been in the situation where I've had to receive negative feedback on work that I've done. And I've had to give negative feedback on work done. And what I really loathe in Raab's letter is the setting up of any negative feedback as being, you can't give any negative feedback, as if the only way to give negative feedback is to make a very senior civil servant who almost certainly has received a lot of, you know, critique of their work throughout their career, feel bullied. It is not a one or the other thing. And this is where Raab's letter is really pernicious, if you ask me. And I've already had some I won't say the word I was going to use, but someone on Twitter saying, oh, the civil service run the UK now. It's just bullshit. It's just bullshit. And it's just setting up this idea that government and civil servants are in opposition to each other, which they're not. I know plenty of current and former civil servants, some of whom share my political sympathies, some of whom don't, all of whom are just trying to do the job of delivering for government. And that is what a civil servant does with their day-to-day. They take the direction of the government and they try to make it work. That can be harder or easier, depending on what the government, the impossibility of what the government is asking them to do. For example, if the government, say, for example, in Brexit and Northern Ireland is asking them to do two completely contradictory things, delivering on that is impossible. But if, on the other hand, it's simply a case of this is our direction of travel, work out how to make that work, any civil servant, and certainly anyone who's a senior career civil servant, will have done that for successive governments with successive ideas, and they know that what their job is to do is to make the machinery of government work in the political direction of the government of the day, and that's what they do to the best of their ability.
Yeah, as ever, there are very, very good civil servants. There are probably less good civil servants, but probably if you're in a senior minister's private office, you've got something going for you. I want to read another part of Dominic Raab's letter, which I think kind of speaks to a bit of what you're saying. He says further down his letter, in setting their threshold for bullying so low, this inquiry has set a dangerous precedent. It will encourage spurious campaigns against ministers and have a chilling effect on those driving change on behalf of your government and ultimately the British people.
Again, it's just bullshit. It's that setting them up against each other. And also, how can you in one letter say, well, I was exonerated from 10 of these counts, if that's the case, the threshold can't be that low.
He does contest.
Really, really low. So that's why I got caught on the other two. I'm sorry, that's bullshit.
Yeah, he does dispute the two that he even he's resigned because two of them were called bullying, but he does even dispute those, but he's accepted he has to resign from them. There is, you're right, it's a bit of a resignation, non-resignation, sorry, not sorry. That's clearly what it is. I think he is obviously pretty angry about this. You and I don't know Dominic Raab. I don't know if you've ever met him. I've never met him. We've obviously had a bit of a leak and a drip of stories about him in various departments and the difficulties of working for him. You and I have discussed this in our personal time as well as in the kind of a political sense. You and I have both had very good bosses and very bad bosses. And very bad bosses often think they're very good bosses and are in this letter to, you know, sort of driving standards. They want high standards and they're, you know, difficult bosses think they're just upholding high standards. And sometimes that is just the case and they're very good, but often they're just being pernickety and controlling and it's impossible to work for such people for any period of time. And as I say, I don't know Dominic Raab. That seems to be the impression coming out of him, you know. But there is a threshold, I think. I'm not defending
There's
him at
a
all.
There's a lack of self-reflection.
Yeah, there is certainly is that in this letter. Yes.
That demonstrates that he is a person with a lack of self-reflection. And that can often be a trait in people who think they're being tough and hard, but are actually being bullies.
Yeah. So it certainly can be. Again, you and I don't know. We're not in those offices. We don't know him, but
we shouldn't have to meet every. I don't know everyone who's ever been convicted of murder, but I'll call them a murderer.
Quite.
No, he's been found to be a bully. He is a bully, and I'm not going to. No one can sue me for saying that.
Well, and we should say that the person investigating this is a pretty serious, high-ranking lawyer. This is not some kind of internal botch job. You know, within the civil service or something. This is an independent, highly ranked lawyer. And, you know, someone like that does have to be taken seriously when they investigate these things.
Yeah. And I think Raab has shown, even in the tone of his letter, that he just doesn't understand what bullying is and has no compulsion to try and find out.
Yeah, and also, you can also be a very difficult, unpleasant person, but just below the threshold of bullying as well.
Yeah, look, I've worked with people who I don't like, but who weren't bullies.
Sure.
You know, there are plenty of people who I would not choose to spend time with outside of the workplace,
but you just get on with it.
And an approach I admired, even if I didn't find them if I found them personally abrasive.
My point actually is, even if you're not quote unquote bullying, you can set a very difficult atmosphere within your office that actually reduces the functioning of it.
Yeah, drives down productivity.
Yeah, and if you're doing that in government, that's also a very serious issue.
Yeah, if you're making it harder for your staff to do what you need them to do, you are not a good boss. Full stop.
And of course, you don't have to resign as a minister because you're not a good boss. Otherwise, quite a lot of people would have had to resign over the years. But there's obviously a problem that we have heard. We've heard many stories of Dominic Raab. You know, Sam, I was watching Sky News just before we recorded. Sam Coates reminded us of an incident during the Brexit negotiations where there was a negotiating team there and Dominic Raab as Foreign Secretary just suddenly turned up.
And this is the thing. There are lots and lots of different elements. One element is bullying. One element is not being very good at your job. One element is not getting the best from your staff. All of these things can be the case, or some of them can be the case. And it seems to me at the moment that all of them are the case when it comes to Dominic Raab.
Yeah. And the thing you have to obviously can't stay in government for is bullying. And as we keep saying, he obviously, from the tone of his letter, is couching it in, I was just trying to set high standards.
Yeah, but again, your own interpretation of your behaviour means very little when talking about the impact of that behaviour on other people.
And on very senior officials.
Yeah.
Who...
But on anyone, it shouldn't matter how senior the person is.
No, well, often... No, and actually it's in some ways far more serious if it's a more junior person who has less capacity to stand up for themselves in a professional setting. But no, my point is, if such senior people, we actually don't know who's made these allegations against Dominic Raab. I believe he does.
Amazingly, Dominic Raab does. If he hadn't resigned, he would have still been working with these people and in charge of them. And that's a really worrying thought because he knew who'd made the allegations.
He does. I believe we are going to see the report from Adam Tolley-Casey.
At some point.
He's, you know, Rishi Sunak said that it will be published in the form he received it. So maybe we'll learn some more when that comes out. I guess, my guess is that the names of some of the people who made complaints will be redacted, and quite rightly so.
I would hope so, in the public version, definitely, I would hope so.
Yeah, they can't go into the public domain, but we will obviously
whistleblowers have the choice as to whether they are exposed as whistleblowers or not, and they really, really have to.
Quite so. And if these people wish to continue their careers in the civil servant, it's quite right that those names are kept private. It leads us to a kind of, we normally do looking ahead towards the end of the show, but I think we have to dive right in here because this could trigger quite a serious reshuffle. I should say, actually, it did make me giggle a bit as I was watching the news coverage of this morning. The Lib Dems went straight in with Daisy Cooper, the deputy leader, calling for a by-election in Dominic Raab's Esher and Walton constituency, which obviously they quite fancy.
they obviously quite fancy
that in the next general election. We know what the Lib Dem machine can do if it gets its teeth stuck into a by-election.
If I were the Lib Dems, I would want to go for a by-election now for two reasons. First of all, Dominic Raab is in the headlines for all the wrong reasons, which helps. They are massively ahead, as I understand it, in Esher and Walton. It's one of the really vulnerable seats between Lib Dem and Tories. But also, Raab is now going to have a lot more time to work his constituency between now and the general election. So there's no way he's going to opt for a by-election or anyone opt for a by-election there because, you know, he's now got, a year, 18 months to really work the seat.
Yeah, and I wonder if someone like him actually quite fancies himself to come back into government. But anyway,
of course he does.
But anyway, the odds of there being a by-election before the general election, I would put somewhere between zero and minus 100.
Yeah.
It's not happening, but
unless
fair play.
Unless he dies, there ain't going to be a murder.
Emma.
And I'm not saying he is going to die. I'm saying that is the only circumstances under which I can see there being one.
Right. It's not happening. We wish Dominic Raab good health in his backbench life.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly not wishing death on anybody. I'm just saying that's the only circumstance in which there'll be a by-election there.
And fair play to the Lib Dems for taking a swing, but it's not happening.
It's a swing and a miss. Yeah.
It's not happening. Very good baseball vernacular, Emma Bunnell. Right, let's look ahead then. Who is going to become the next Justice Secretary?
Oh, can I just say that Dominic Raab's people were briefing that he was going to come out swinging, which could have all sorts of meanings that he hadn't really thought about.
Oh, no. That's not an image I needed on a Friday morning. Well, I mean, he has, you know, obviously stuck up for himself in this letter. But anyway, I want to know who the next Justice Secretary is going to be.
Well, the top three names in the frame, I haven't got them on hand, but they're all women, which is interesting.
Yes.
Have you got them to hand? I know they were named in the...
The truth is there's all sorts of names floating about. And it will be interesting because the other question for all of this is, does Rishi Sunak want to use it as a way to trigger a wider reshuffle?
I strongly suspect that he'll replace just the Justice Secretary at the moment and go for a broader reshuffle after the locals.
You would think that is the logical way of doing it.
Because that's been rumoured for a long time.
We should say a couple of things. Not only has Dominic Raab gone, Michelle Dolan, the Digital Secretary, is about to leave for 10 weeks of maternity leave. So someone has to step up and do that job as well. So the names being bandied around, I have to confess, I've only heard of a couple of them.
Victoria Prentice is one, isn't she?
Yeah, Victoria Prentice, Victoria Adams, Lucy Fraser, Alex Chalk, Robert Buckland could return.
Adams or Atkins? Someone Atkins Robert, is definitely in the frame.
We've got Robert Buckland on the list. We've got Edward Agar, Robert Jenrick. There's a few
floating around. I mean, Robert Jenrick ain't going to get it. He's just been done for speeding, hasn't he?
Yes, he did a bit of an Andy Burnham and got a nice big speeding fine.
Yeah, you can't make the guy who's just got a speeding fine Justice Secretary in this government, which has largely been plagued by being fined for things.
Yes, well, as I say, he might want to discuss how you play that out with Andy Burnham.
Andy Burnham shouldn't have done it. If you get a fine, you shouldn't do the thing you get a fine for. I will admit that I no longer have, but have previously had points on my license for speeding. So full disclosure there, but I'm not running for anything. But I'm not saying that it disqualifies you from everything and anything. Lots and lots of people have had this. What I'm saying is that specifically Justice Secretary, specifically in this government, where have been a theme.
Might be more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah,
I can understand your argument. Robert Buckland, I think, is an interesting one, given he's done the job. Seems quite has always come across as quite a serious and reasonable man in, you know, his various roles in government. Lucy Fraser is a lawyer. She's a lawyer, is the current culture secretary. There's a few interesting there. Victoria Prentice is the Attorney General already, so could just be bumped up one. You'd obviously then have to bring another lawyer to make them the current Attorney General. But, you know, there's no shortage of lawyers within any of the benches in Parliament. So that would probably be doable. It's maybe a good way to get someone into government. It's going to be interesting to watch. I think I agree with you that we're not going to see a big reshuffle. We'll see someone as an interim for Michelle Dolan. By the way, 10 weeks maternity leave.
Appalling.
To go back to a very high powered. Anyway, that's a whole separate conversation.
Is that her choice or is that what's allowed? Because if
truly,
it's
I don't.
Fine, but if it's what's allowed, then that's ridiculous.
It might well be her choice because I think I have vague memories of other people taking longer. I mean, the truth is, maternity leave in Parliament has been a shambles forever. So I truly don't know. But yes, it has been a shambles forever and something that would be well. We're only just getting sorted. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one who takes those jobs. Do you have any inkling of those names we're all sort of throwing around?
I have
no
idea.
A funny one, isn't it?
I mean, Justice Secretary, it's an interesting time
thinking that.
Because crime is obviously going to be a huge, huge theme at the election. So you are going to be the person in charge of the poison chalice.
Yes.
So does Rishi give that to someone he trusts, a safe pair of hands, or does he give it to someone that he doesn't want to take over from him in order to have them be the fall guy?
Yeah, you deeply, deeply cynical individual.
By the term political.
I was thinking the same thing, that crime is front and centre, and the combination of Justice Secretary and Home Secretary are going to really matter over the next 12, 18 months, and actually will matter immediately, as we've seen.
Yeah.
In the run up to the local elections, it really does matter. I mean, it's an important job anyway, but it's going to be a very focal issue.
Yeah. And the justice system is, it's not just in crisis, it's beyond crisis. Mm. You know, the court backlogs are insane. Conviction rates for rape are less than 1%. And that's the rape cases that get to trial. And that's less than 1 or 2%. So, you know, we've basically decriminalised one of the worst crimes in society to all intents and purposes. And then other just like nobody feels like it's worth calling the police for a burglary for anything other than the crime number for the insurance.
Oh, bike theft. Let me tell you about bike theft, my friend. So I'm not laughing. You might have caught me just muttering while you were saying that. I was laughing because Politico have described Robert Jenrick as the banter choice for the reasons you said, because of his driving ban. But anyway, we will see that.
Have a ban, by the way. I just had some points.
Right. to get back to the very serious point you're making, there is... Even if you're only doing this on a temporary basis, there are some very serious things that need to be done within the justice system very, very quickly. Never mind the politics of crime being a big deal, which tends to kind of fall on the Home Secretary anyway.
Well, it does, but that's largely because we haven't actually woken up to the changes that happened, you know, many years ago, where we separated out Home Secretary, the Home Office and Justice.
Yeah, but it tends to fall on the Home Secretary. I suspect the Justice Secretary is going to be much more in focus as well. The combination will be. So it's going to be a very big call from Rishi Sunak. And I've said to you that there's things about Rishi Sunak I like and think he's good at. One of the things I don't think he's good at is small p politics.
Mm.
I don't think often his political intuition is very good. I mean, for instance, even this morning, he could have said to Dominic Raab, you and I are very close. I will always support you. And I hope you will always support me. But please, as your last favour, let me sack you.
Yeah.
I understand you can put your grievances into the public domain, but let me sack you so that I look like I've sacked you.
Yeah, yeah.
We've talked, I think, about the incident where Boris Johnson and he both got fined. A perfect opportunity for him to take the moral high ground and say, I'm resigning. His political intuition isn't great.
He fluffed it completely.
He fluffed that one with the COVID fines. So it will, and this is a very political calculation as much as it's anything else. Of course it is. So I think it will be interesting if he does the safe pair of hands thing, when actually I wonder if at the moment a bolder choice is what is needed. I personally don't know who within the Conservative Party would be that bolder choice. But I think something like that might be needed if they want to reset the narrative on crime, if they want to... You know what? I'm going to make a football analogy now.
Oh, God.
I know. I'm sorry. And it's not quite the same, but there's a thing in football called the new manager bounce, that if a team is doing badly, the manager gets sacked and they bring in a new manager. And often what happens is that team picks up a few extra points just from the new energy and ideas and whatever else. by virtue of having a new manager. And I wonder if the Conservative Party is a bit in that territory where it needs, look, Justice Secretary isn't the most senior position, but a bit of new vibrancy and energy in a key area might not be a bad thing.
I mean, okay, but the new manager would be replacing Sunak.
Sure, but I wasn't a joke.
Sunak had that new manager energy thing, and I think that's partly why the polls have narrowed. Partly it's that Liz Truss and Boris Johnson aren't in charge anymore. Yep. But
as I said, it wasn't a direct comparison, but you understand the point I'm making.
Manager energy will dissipate by the time of the election, because Sunak will have been... So Sunak's got the problem of having taken over too soon so that he won't be new and fresh and interesting by the time of the election. Now, neither will Keir Starmer, to be fair. He'll have been in the post much longer than Sunak. But neither of them can therefore...
Much longer.
But Sunak has the added problem of they're in government.
Yes. So, and the party's been in government for a long time.
Had a go at it yet. So he gets to be applying for a new job.
Yes.
Whereas Sunak's simply reapplying for the old one that he's been just about managing.
Yes. The other question that comes from Dominic Raab's resignation, and we'll have to wrap up shortly, is do we have a deputy prime minister, or does Sunak quietly get rid of that role?
Yeah, that will be interesting. That will be very interesting, actually. That's far more than who gets to be Justice Secretary. Is does anyone get to be Deputy Prime Minister, and what does that mean and say?
I've just had a name flash into my head. You're not going to like it.
You say Gavin Williamson, I'll thump you over the screen.
No, I just had Michael Gove as a kind of...
Because he hasn't got enough jobs.
And he's just kind of that person that you sort of send for in these situations.
He is... I don't know how close him and Sunak are, though.
Good point. Yep.
Because it's usually your trusted mate guy.
Yeah. Which Raab was.
Yeah, exactly. It would be interesting. We shall see. I'll tell you who's really, really happy with Dominic Raab today.
Apart from us.
Humza Yousaf.
Well, oh my God, you are so good. Because I was going to say, whilst we're on the subject of crime and justice, we've got to talk about the SNP.
I mean, my God, things fall apart. Flipping egg.
Just a bit. Colin Beattie has stood down as the SNP treasurer. He was arrested on Tuesday because the police are continuing to investigate what's gone on with the SNP's funding and finances. It's not, you think Rishi Sunak's having a difficult time. Humza Yousaf is definitely been thrown straight into the fire, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, well, and it's so fascinating because Humza Yousaf was clearly the choice of his predecessor.
Sure.
And they put their thumb a little on the scale, not to the extent that people expected them to be fair, but
and the result was relatively close.
And the result was, it wasn't the evil ratio.
It was 52-48, yep.
And you have to wonder what Humza Yousaf did to Nicola Sturgeon to be her chosen person to take all this shit.
Yes. So, Colin Beattie, for those who don't know, is the SNP for Midlothian and North Musselburgh. I should read his statement in the name of fairness, given it's a legal issue. He said... He's resigned and said, I have also informed the SNP chief whip at Holyrood that I will be stepping back from my role on the public audit committee until the police investigation has been concluded. On a personal level, this decision has not been easy, but it is the right decision to avoid further distraction to the important working being led by Humza Yousaf to improve the SNP's governance and transparency. I will continue to cooperate fully with Police Scotland's inquiries, and it would be inappropriate for me to comment any further on a live case. I don't quite know what else to say. This is a gigantic mess for the SNP. This looked like an impenetrable machine under Nicola Sturgeon. And your comment of things fall apart seems absolutely on the money, but it's just a mess.
I'm actually writing my newsletter this week on party governance on the back of all of this and thinking about why NECs, which is what we have in Labour and the SNP. As far as I recall, the Lib Dems have one of the most complicated systems. Which means that nobody's ever really in charge of anything.
Well, yes. We're not going to get into Lib Dem party governments on the show because A, we'd lose all our listeners, and B, we'd both collapse.
Whereas the Tories just seem to appoint a treasurer and that's it.
Yeah.
They have a board, but it's not... I don't think it's elected by members. This is what I'm looking into today. Yeah. But that goes both ways, and that's what my piece will be about. But the thing is people in the SNP, NEC, and the point I'm making for the podcast, could potentially be financially liable if the SNP goes bust. The fact is that a treasurer resigned 2 years ago, saying they didn't have the information they needed to do their job. The fact is the auditors sacked their client, said, please don't give us any more of your money. We cannot do this job 6 months ago, and nobody knew. People resigned. I think Joanna Cherry resigned from the NEC of the SNP because she had no faith in the process a long time ago. And, you know, there have been warning after warning after warning that's just been ignored by people who just thought they should, you know, any complaint about Nicola was a blow against independence. And that, no, I mean, let's call it what it is, no debate tactic, is once again proving to be the single worst thing you can do for a cause you believe in.
And it certainly doesn't work once the person who you've not been debating around has gone.
I think if she'd stayed, and this would all have come out with her in charge.
And her husband.
The police tent outside her house would have happened while she was First Minister.
Yes. I mean, it is a total shambles. I can't think of anything more to add to it because, one, there's a live legal case. We've got to see how that plays out. But two, let's just focus on the politics. This has made it impossible for Humza Yousaf to make any impact as a new First Minister. Talking of that new manager bounce.
He's literally just seen as a dead man walking, the fool guy, the guy who's carrying them through the shitty time. Whether he can be replaced with someone else or whether the SNP just literally falls apart is a live question.
It has to be at this point. It really has to be. Well, we will wait and see. We've got to wrap up our conversation. Emma, you've talked about your newsletter. Where can people make sure they get that straight to their inbox?
So if you go to Substack, my newsletter is called Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, but it's softleft.substack, I believe. I'm never any good at these URLs. But
The link is always in the show notes, so you make sure you subscribe to that. I'd love you to join me and subscribe to theedition.substack.com as well, where I write about tech and media and all that good stuff. We're both on Twitter as well, as is House of Comments at HOC Podcast. So make sure you follow us all there. Goodness knows what we'll have to discuss next week, but we'll see you then.